What is really going on, crypto savages? You are listening to the Coin Spice podcast with host C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief at coinspice.io, your home for spicy crypto things on the net.
What is really going on, crypto savages? This is your host, C. Edward Kelso, editor-in-chief out at coinspice.io, back with another episode of the Coin Spice podcast. This is the first part of an hour-long podcast with Libertarian presidential candidate, a hopeful for the party's nomination, Adam Kokesh. And this particular part of an hour-long podcast is all about his activism, his start going back way back to 2007, leading to his popular YouTube channel, his television run, his many arrests and running with the police, all the way up to his current activism in Nolens, in the Houdat city, in Louisiana, and what he's doing there. He is an interesting character. He has used and brought, you know, a lot of people, I think if you ask them, early on, said it, credit Kokesh with bringing them over to crypto. He continues to use it. You'll hear some of the numbers regarding his book on how he recently distributed them in Louisiana and all that good stuff along with his activism. The second part of the hour-long episode has to do with Acapulco, the murder of John Galton, his theories about that, about the gathering down there. And if you're interested in that part of it, we don't touch on it in this particular segment. This is all about Adam's presidential campaign and activism, which is super interesting. But if you're looking for the murder type stuff, that is on the other episode, which you can easily find at coinspice.io. Without further ado, here is Libertarian presidential candidate Adam Kokesh.
You don't know this, but I am. I go way back to your dancing days, as they're known. when you did your mall gig, and I've sort of been following you. Now, at first,
I still dance. I still dance.
That's good to hear.
Mostly alone and in the shower, but you know, I dance.
Yeah. I've followed you for a long, long time, which sounds really creepy if I take that out of context. But I've followed your career.
People who don't know, I have, and you're probably one of the few who know some of my work, who know my whole story. But like my career go as an activist, full time, goes back to 2007 when I first got involved with the Iraq Veterans Against the War and became a national public figure very quickly at that point. And then even before that, in college, I was organizing our campus libertarian group and doing various things on campus to protest the pending restrictions on the alcohol policy. That was my first college protest.
That was your gateway in.
Yeah. But just to give people the quick rundown, I was in the Marine Corps, volunteered to go to Fallujah in 2004, came back, was disgruntled, volunteered to go back, got in trouble, got pissed off, got out of the Marine Corps, and was just pissed off enough to really question things and joined Iraq Veterans Against the War. Was active full-time with them, just sort of fell over backwards into full-time activism. I was getting paid, you know, a few hundred bucks here and there to give speeches. And that seemed a lot more interesting than selling insurance for Aflac and going to grad school, which is what I was doing. I kept up most of the grad school, but I never actually took the training and got certified to sell insurance and just didn't do it because never sold any because I got involved with Iraq Veterans Against the War full time, or ran away with the circus, depending on how you want to describe that. Yeah. And then when Obama won in 2008 and the anti-war left revealed that it was more left than anti-war, I was endorsed by Ron Paul to run as a Republican for Congress in New Mexico. And I'm a lifetime member of the Libertarian Party. I have no allegiance to the Republican Party. If they want to be Big Tent, include libertarians, hey, I might work with them if the, if our entrants coincide. I highly doubt that's going to happen in any kind of credible way. I think we're gonna dissolve the government first before that would happen, or hell would freeze over, as some might say. But then I lost the primary because I made the mistake of trusting the Republican establishment there in the state. And then couldn't shut up when the race was over, so I got a radio show, and that was the start of Adam versus the Man on AM 1550 KIVA, more Puzzle Talk Radio, Albuquerque. And when it was about to get canceled after 6 months, because I wasn't selling any ads, because I just wanted to talk about stuff, and I was growing pot in my apartment. So one of the first legal patient grows in New Mexico. It was a lot of fun to be able to turn a cop down at my door by showing him a little piece of plastic from the state. But yeah, fun story there. We'll get into that. But then my radio show, as it was being canceled, got picked up as a television show on RT America. And I had a TV show, the bottom rung of the legitimate TV ladder, RT America. Which means I have more of a legitimate Russian government connection than Donald Trump.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got to go, no, I actually worked for the Russian government. And I had a TV show, and I got canceled after 4 months because I was being critical of Putin, and it was right before the midterms that he really, or right after, excuse me, the midterms that he really messed with him before the next big election there. So it was interesting experience overall, and that was 2011. I got canceled and focused on my YouTube channel for a while, got it up to 250,000 subscribers and over 70 million views, and kind of got away from that when I started getting censored. And I wrote the book Freedom, which I am here in New Orleans right now because we just gave away 204,473 copies. One for every residential mailbox in the city. So now we're just working with people here for engagement to get more people to read it and get engaged. It's you know, this, Ed, that, you know, paradigm shifts like to libertarianism or anarchism or anarcho-capitalism, they don't happen overnight. And we do ourselves a disservice when we try to mythologize those transformations, because they happen quietly, privately. They usually involve books or getting, you know, as I've been told, man, I just binge watched your videos for a weekend, and I was like, okay, I get it, you know, like that happens. But it's quiet personal contemplation, at least that. So I've been focused on the book, and I'm running for the Libertarian Party nomination for president in 2020 on the platform of dissolving the entire federal government in a peaceful, orderly, responsible manner. And there are a lot of awesome tie-ins there with blockchain technology and Bitcoin and how that can be used, and how we can use this to make that transition. I'm a true believer that way. I don't have a dog in the fight between the maximalists and the cashers and the altcoiners or any of that. I just support anything that's challenging the government money monopoly that looks like an honest attempt to do that. And I'm blown away. I mean, it is Bitcoin or the blockchain or whatever you want to describe it. If you want to say blockchain technology, fine. But this is, you know, the biggest innovation that humanity's experienced probably since the internet itself.
Right. And it's kind of your work, just to interrupt you for a second, and that's why I wanted you on, is that your work is a real demonstration of the power of crypto, in the sense that the book and the numbers you cited there are kind of unbelievable. I mean, people, I don't think realize that even, you know, sort of publishing house, you know, corporate books don't get, you know,
200,000 copies delivered. Yeah.
Right. They get, I mean, you'll get on the New York Times bestseller list if you sell like maybe 4,000 copies. Right. So you've managed to push this idea out, and from my understanding is a lot of your funding has come through the crypto community. Is that right?
Yes, absolutely. For this book bomb project, it was actually about half and half, in and out. But definitely the majority of my activism over the last 4 or 5 years has been really directly connected to cryptocurrency support, to people who have made money in cryptocurrency. And yeah, I mean, that's, I think it's mainly that I got a lot of my audience turned on to crypto very, very early. I spent a lot of $5 and $10 Bitcoin on the Silk Road in order to engage with the currency rather than to sit on it. And oh boy, do I wish I had sat on a lot more. But you know, I've made a few $10,000 myself, you know, over the last few years with my investments. I day traded for a little while. When I got out of jail in 2013, kind of saved my butt. There was a 2-week period there when crypto, or when Bitcoin was around 800, and I was trading on BTC-E, the one that doesn't exist anymore.
Sure, I was about to say.
Does that bring back memories for you?
Is this sure does.
Yeah, so I was day trading on there, and I doubled my holdings in a 2-week period when Bitcoin was roughly flat at around $800. And it, you know, it's a great opportunity in the space. I don't keep up with it at that level now, because I'm really focused on you know this is one of the hard lessons for me over the course of my activism. And I know, you know, you have me on to discuss this murder in Acapulco, and it's been taking up a lot of my brain space lately, unfortunately. Very sad event. But, you know, I generally now try to stay focused on, you know, the two, you know, big objectives for me that come out of my ideology of voluntarism. I'm absolutely an ideologue. I have a standard of justice. I want to see justice done in the world. I see that government as we know it as a coercive institution is ethically illegitimate, and the sooner we get away from it, the better. So from that perspective, one of my objectives is to wake up as many as people as possible to this idea. And the second is to actually change the world works based on this idea. And, you know, if you're not doing one of those things, if you know, as an activist, you're probably off track. I don't mean to presume for other people, but like, it's taken me a long time to realize I don't care about views. I don't care about followers. I don't really care about money. You know, I have enough to be comfortable right now. I have enough to barely comfortably support a family and passive income, if and build up my homestead very slowly in Arizona where I live off grid, if I wanted to do that. I'd like some more money. I'm not going to, you know, lie about that. But I'm barely comfortable because I put everything else right now into my activism, because I believe that that's, you know, a better long-term investment both for me and for humanity. So I'm here in New Orleans. I'm focused on this book bomb, getting people who have, a lot of people saw the book. You know, I've been invited to do a mural. I've got a local band that wants to throw a concert for me. And I've been invited back to talk to a lot of people here, and for my lawsuit about my false arrest challenging the shall ID laws in the state of Louisiana. I've got a great lawyer who's going to take that on. I got dropped on my head when I got arrested here, a little over a month ago. But that's a story for another time. People can look that up.
But you went to, because you're, there's so much to talk about with you.
I'm focused on that, the book, waking people up, getting to read the book. I'm considering bringing back the Adam versus the Man podcast as a daily 1-hour
show,
because I know that that also helped wake a lot of people up. I'm really, just so you know, I'm really apprehensive about it, because I never want to have to worry about distribution and social media stuff with it ever again. You know, I have to, and I honestly never want to worry about production myself ever again, to do the quality that I want to do that right. I mean, I'm looking for a significant investment, you know, something like around $50,000, $60,000 to launch it properly, to build a portable studio and all that. So I'm like, you know, it would, and just with all the censorship on social media, you know, I got to be able to hire someone and pay them reliably and say, look, you're not going to lose your job because YouTube screwed us again, or because, you know, the market tanked and Steam isn't worth anything. You know, so I got to, if I'm going to hire someone, you know, at this point in my career, I got to be responsible about it and have, you know, a reliable way to pay them. So that, and then the presidential campaign is really just about organizing delegates within the Libertarian Party to win the nomination. You know, I'm doing interviews with that you know, mainstream outside of that. But really the focus is just working within the Libertarian Party, building up the Libertarian Party and bringing our people into the Libertarian Party who know how to show up and be delegates. So that, sorry, that's all I got there.
No. People want to hear you, not me. So I'm glad you're getting it out there. That's a nice way to kind of frame your background. I can't believe you're unfamiliar with Adam Kokesh, but if you are, just Google the guy. And I mean, you will spend it's a giant rabbit hole of activism.
Yeah. It is, yeah.
Of activism. He's been out everywhere. He's tried unconventional ways to bring attention to different issues. There's
almost 12 years yeah. of full time activism, and I've been arrested, over 50 times now, mostly civil disobedience.
Yeah, and the latest one in New Orleans was really interesting because I got the live stream of it, and I think you put it up there, and it just kind of went viral for a little while. And I'm laughing more at the absurdity than I am.
Oh no, yeah, it is. It's hilarious. You know, I've even done. I never want anybody to think of me as like please. And a lot of activists do this, and a lot of what I've presented in the past has kind of been based on this. But like, please don't pity me ever.
No, but it was more like just the absurdity. So if you've never been to Louisiana, the parts of the what we call the expressway or the super highway or whatever you want to call it are just filthy. And so Adam's idea was to take a stencil, and which is the rough equivalent of the title of his book, take a stencil and power wash. So he's effectively cleaning the side of this barrier on an expressway where lots and lots of cars go by. He's going to power wash freedom on there and essentially make it cleaner. But then what happens is it's so filthy that it almost looks like he's put white paint on there. And so then the cop charges him with blocking the highway, which he wasn't. He was off to the side.
Well, not quite. If people want to get the I don't want to, criticize you for being wrong on the details, because a story like this is complicated and has some legal technicalities. Sure. But, they first came over because they thought we were spray painting.
Right, and, right.
They jumped up. Well, people can go watch the live video. It's like 10 minutes, 12 minutes, something like that. It's a fun video to watch. But the crux of it was that I actually got arrested for not showing an ID because when they asked me for ID, I instead read my rights card. And instead, I reserve my rights to remain silent. Can I speak to an attorney? Am I free to go? It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they basically cuffed me as soon as I started, mid-sentence. They were like, nope, we're not doing this. And it's like, just even if they're legally justified in this, like, how big a dick do you have to be to say, look, sir, or to not just take the time to say, look, sir, this is how it works in Louisiana. This is our precedent. I'm just doing my job. Not that that's an excuse. I'm just doing my job. And if you don't, we asked you for ID. You're legally compelled to show ID in the state. If you don't, we're going to have to arrest you. You're going to get charged with a misdemeanor, both the police and the system. Would you like to show us your driver's license, sir? Just give me that opportunity. But they didn't. They just cuffed me. The fun thing is, so I got dropped on my head, and this is like because I went limp and mute. Essentially strategically. I don't mean literally limp and mute the whole time, but when they asked me questions like, you ready to go? I'd say, no attorney, no questions. And when they said, it's time to go, I'd say, that's nice, And if they touched me, I would go limp. And I made them carry me everywhere. And the stateies, before they got me to the jail where the cameras are, they dropped me on my head. But then for 3 days, I resisted. And I really played the strategy consistently, and I won, and it's a great story, and I'm almost embarrassed that so many times I've been arrested, I haven't really properly executed the strategy before. They came to get me to go to court after 2 days and said, okay, Mr. Kokesh, would you like to go to court? Are you ready to go to court? And I said, sure, absolutely, I'm totally ready, except, I do have a few things that I believe we have to take care of first. where can I get a shave before we go to court? It doesn't work that way, sir. I said, okay, I can be flexible on that one. All right, but I do have a right to put on a business suit to be professionally presentable at court, and I'd like, how do I make arrangements to put on? He says, it doesn't work that way, sir. I'm like, okay, well, I can be flexible on that, but I do have one more thing. I do need to speak to an attorney before I go to court. I know I have that constitutional right, and I would like to see an attorney first. I'd be happy to get up and cooperate if I can go see an attorney. And he said, we'll see you next week, Mr. Kokesh, and then close the door. But later that night, and after being moved in a wheelchair, they finally figured out that instead of giving me a wedgie in my stump suit, that it was easier to just pick me up and put me in a wheelchair and move me around a couple times. They tried to release me, and I wouldn't let them release me without letting me call my lawyer first. And, you know, I wouldn't even cooperate with the release. So on the way in, they stripped me without asking me, because I probably would have just changed myself. I don't think they asked. They just dragged me into the changing room and put tore my clothes off and put a jumpsuit on me. So on the way out, it's kind of disturbing the first time it happens, you know, but I was going limp. So like, okay, whatever. I mean, getting dropped on my head was worse than being stripped naked by a bunch of prison guards. But on the way out, I made them do it in reverse. I made them take my jumpsuit off and put my clothes back on me just to say, up yours, and I'm not even going to help with this part of it. And then they wheeled me out of there and dumped me on the sidewalk with my papers and my personal effect. Wow. So, and all charges were dropped. So now we also have a false arrest case against them. Whereas if I had cooperated, you know, and I could have, I actually wanted to stay in there longer. Just to see what I could experience and what other constitutional failures I could experience for a potential lawsuit in the jail. And I was enjoying it. I was having a good time there. So now we have a bunch of lawsuits, pending or I should say in the works, you know, for false arrest, for violation of constitutional rights, both in the arrest and in the jail, and for the possibly accidental dropping me on my head. We'll see if they have the body cam footage or not. So there's all that. But yeah, this, you know, the strategy too of going limp and mute, it's really kind of a principled one. And it was so great. One of the guards who was wheeling me in a wheelchair, this woman, he was passing the hallway, another guard asked, why is that inmate in a wheelchair? He can walk? Look at him. And he said, well, he thinks that what we're doing is criminal, and he doesn't want to be an accessory to it. And I was like, yes! Yes! You got it. He's listening. He's a
red pill one guy right there.
Yeah. No, I don't know if I read them, but I definitely planted a lot of good people.
Wow.
If a few people did this, you know, not only would you win more cases, but if a handful of people did this every day, just in Orleans Parish here, they, and a couple of guards told me this, like, you know, they would be forced to stop arresting people for bullshit, for the non-crimes, and they would be basically forced to prioritize, and you know, obviously we're talking to the people who let rape kits go untested while they're busting people for pot, although pot is decrim in Orleans Parish, so it is, you know, anyway. There's a lot more to that story. I'll leave it there. We got
Brian. And this is for people who are listening. This is a slice. This is the most recent slice of Adam's act. And this just goes on. And you know, you can make of it what you'd like. I personally find it edifying that there's someone like him out there doing this stuff. I don't know, you know, ultimately where I come down on, you know, more people doing it. But I definitely, Jesus, you know, it is – every time he does something, whether you think it's nuts or not, there's you know, you go, oh, God damn it, Adam. And then you watch it, and you go, well, fuck. And you kind of, you get a little upset, and it's just one more, I'm talking as a viewer now, it's just one more, you know, absurdity in this long line. So anyway, that was sort of a long way to go.